Chapter 12. For 10 years, the Galactic Empire had been without an emperor, but there was no indication of that fact in the way the Imperial Palace grounds were operated. Millennia of custom made the absence of an emperor meaningless. It meant, of course, that there was no figure in imperial robes to preside over formalities of one sort or another. No imperial voice gave orders. No imperial wishes made themselves known. No imperial gratifications or annoyances made themselves felt. No imperial pleasures warmed either palace. No imperial sicknesses cast them in gloom. The emperor's own quarters in the small palace were empty. The imperial family did not exist. And yet the army of gardeners kept the grounds in perfect condition. An army of service people kept the buildings in top shape. The emperor's bed, never slept in, was made with fresh sheets every day. The rooms were cleaned. Everything worked as it always worked. And the entire imperial staff, from top to bottom, worked as they had always worked. The top officials gave commands as they would have done if the emperor had lived, commands that they knew the emperor would have given. In many cases, in particular in the higher echelons, the personnel were the same as those who had been there on Cleon's last day of life. The new personnel who had been taken on were carefully molded and trained into the traditions they would have to serve. It was as though the empire, accustomed to the rule of an emperor, insisted on this ghost rule to hold the empire together. The junta knew this. Or if they didn't, they felt it vaguely. In 10 years, none of those military men who had commanded the empire had moved into the emperor's private quarters in the small palace. Whatever these men were, they were not imperial, and they knew they had no rights there. A populace that endured the loss of liberty would not endure any sign of irreverence to the emperor, alive or dead. Even General Tenar had not moved into the graceful structure that had housed the emperors of a dozen different dynasties for so long. He had made his home and office in one of the structures built on the outskirts of the grounds. Eyesores, but eyesores that were built like fortresses, sturdy enough to withstand a siege, with outlying buildings in which an enormous force of guards was housed. Tenar was a stocky man, with a mustache. It was not a vigorous, overflowing, doll-like mustache, but one that was carefully clipped and fitted to the upper lip, leaving a strip of skin between the hair and the line of the lip. It was a reddish mustache, and Tenar had cold, blue eyes. He had probably been a handsome man in his younger days, but his face was pudgy now, and his eyes were slits that expressed anger more often than any other emotion. So he said angrily, as one would who felt himself to be absolute master of millions of worlds, and yet who dared not call himself an emperor, to Hender Lin, "I can establish a dynasty of my own." He looked around with a scowl. "This is not a fitting place for the master of the empire." Lin said softly, "To be master is what is important. Better to be a master in a cubicle than a figurehead in a palace." "Best yet, to be master in a palace. Why not?" Lin bore the title of colonel, but it is quite certain that he had never engaged in any military action. His function was that of telling Tenar what he wanted to hear, and of carrying his orders unchanged to others. On occasion, if it seemed safe, he might try to steer Tenar into more prudent courses. Lin was well known as Tenar's lackey, and knew that was how he was known. It did not bother him. As lackey, he was safe, and he had seen the downfall of those who had been too proud to be lackeys. The time might, of course, come when Tenar himself would be buried in the ever-changing junta panorama. But Lin felt with a certain amount of philosophy, that he would be aware of it in time and save himself. Or he might not. There was a price for everything. "No reason why you can't found a dynasty, General," said Lin. "Many others have done it in the long imperial history. Still, it takes time. The people are slow to adapt. It's usually only the second or even third of the dynasty who is fully accepted as emperor." "I don't believe that. I need merely announce myself as new emperor. Who will dare quarrel with that? My grip is tight." "So it is, General. Your power is unquestioned on Trantor and in most of the inner worlds. Yet it is possible that many in the farther outer worlds will not, just yet, accept a new imperial dynasty." "Inner worlds or outer worlds, military force rules all. That is an old imperial maxim."
"And a good one," said Lin. "But many of the provinces have armed forces of their own nowadays that they may not use on your behalf. These are difficult times."
"You counsel caution, then?"
"I always counsel caution, General."
"And someday you may counsel it once too often."
Lin bent his head. "I can only counsel what seems to me to be good and useful to you, General."
"As in your constant harping to me about this Harry Seldon."
"He is your greatest danger, General."
"So you keep saying, but I don't see it. He's just a college professor."
Lin said, "So he is, but he was once first minister."
"I know, but that was in Cleon's time. Has he done anything since? With times being difficult, and with the governors of the provinces being fractious, why is a professor my greatest danger?"
"It is sometimes a mistake," said Lin carefully, for one had to be careful in educating the general, "to suppose that a quiet, unobtrusive man can be harmless. Seldon has been anything but harmless to those he has opposed. 20 years ago, the Joranumite movement almost destroyed Cleon's powerful first minister, Ato Demerzel." Tenar nodded, but the slight frown on his face betrayed his effort to remember the matter. "It was Seldon who destroyed Joranum and who succeeded Demerzel as first minister. The Joranumite movement survived, however, and Seldon engineered its destruction too, but not before it succeeded in bringing about the assassination of Cleon."
"But Seldon survived that, didn't he?"
"You are perfectly correct. Seldon survived."
"That is strange. To have permitted an imperial assassination should have meant death for a first minister."
"So it should have. Nevertheless, the junta has allowed him to live. It seemed wiser to do so."
"Why?"
Lin sighed internally. "There is something called psychohistory, General."
"I know nothing about that," said Tenar flatly.
Actually, he had a vague memory of Lin trying to talk to him on a number of occasions concerning this strange collection of syllables. He had never wanted to listen, and Lin had known better than to push the matter. Tenar didn't want to listen now, either, but there seemed to be a hidden urgency in Lin's words. Perhaps, Tenar thought, he had now better listen. "Almost no one knows anything about it," said Lin. "Yet there are a few, intellectuals who find it of interest."
"And what is it?"
"It is a complex system of mathematics." Tenar shook his head.
"Leave me out of that, please. I can count my military divisions. That's all the mathematics I need."
"The story is," said Lin, that psychohistory may make it possible to predict the future. The general's eyes bulged.
You mean this Selden is a fortune teller?
Not in the usual fashion. It is a matter of science.
I don't believe it.
It is hard to believe, but Selden has become something of a cult figure here on Trentor, and in certain places in the outer worlds. Now, psychohistory, if it can be used to predict the future, or if even people merely think it can be so used, can be a powerful tool with which to uphold the regime. I'm sure you have already seen this, General. One need merely predict our regime will endure and bring forth peace and prosperity for the Empire. People believing this will help make it a self-fulfilling prophecy. On the other hand, if Selden wishes the reverse, he can predict civil war and ruin. People will believe that, too, and that would destabilize the regime.
In that case, Colonel, we simply make sure that the predictions of psychohistory are what we want them to be.
It would be Selden who would have to make them, and he is not a friend of the regime. It is important, General, that we differentiate between the project that is working at Streeling University to perfect psychohistory and Harry Selden. Psychohistory can be extremely useful to us, but it will be so only if someone other than Selden were in charge.
Are there others who could be?
Oh, yes. It is only necessary to get rid of Selden.
What is so difficult with that? An order of execution, and it is done.
It would be better, General, if the government was not seen to be directly involved in such a thing.
Explain.
I have arranged to have him meet with you so that you can use your skill to probe his personality. You would then be able to judge whether certain suggestions I have in mind are worthwhile or not.
When is the meeting to take place?
It was to take place very soon, but his representatives at the project asked for a few days' leeway because they were in the process of celebrating his birthday, his 60th, apparently. It seemed wise to allow that and to permit a week's delay.
Why? Demanded Tenar. I dislike any display of weakness.
Quite right, General. Quite right. Your instincts are, as always, correct. However, it seemed to me that the needs of the state might require us to know what and how the birthday celebration, which is taking place right now, might involve.
Why?
All knowledge is useful. Would you care to see some of the festivities? General Tenar's face remained dark.
Is that necessary?
I think you will find it interesting, General. The reproduction, sight and sound, was excellent, and for quite a while the hilarity of the birthday celebration filled the rather stark room in which the General sat. Lin's low voice served as commentary. Most of this, General, is taking place in the project complex, but the rest of the university is involved. We will have an air view in a few moments, and you will see that the celebration covers a wide area. In fact, though I don't have the evidence available right now, there are corners of the planet, here and there in various university and sectoral settings mostly, where what we might call sympathy celebrations of one sort or another are taking place. The celebrations are still continuing, and will endure for another day at least.
Are you telling me that this is a Trentor-wide celebration?
In a specialized way. It affects mostly the intellectual classes, but it is surprisingly widespread. It may even be that there is some shouting on worlds other than Trentor.
Where did you get this reproduction?
Lin smiled. Our facilities in the project are quite good. We have reliable sources of information, so that little can happen that doesn't come our way at once.
Well then, Lin, what are all your conclusions about this?
It seems to me, General, and I'm sure that it seems so to you, that Harry Seldon is the focus of a personality cult. He has so identified himself with psychohistory that if we were to get rid of him in too open a manner, we would entirely destroy the credibility of the science. It would be useless to us.
On the other hand, General, Seldon is growing old, and it is not difficult to imagine him being replaced by another man, someone we could choose, and who would be friendly to our great aims and hopes for the Empire. If Seldon could be removed in such a way that it is made to seem natural, then that is all we need.
The General said,
And you think I ought to see him?
Yes, in order to weigh his quality and decide what we ought to do. But we must be cautious, for he is a popular man.
I have dealt with popular people before, said Tenar darkly.